most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on a Thursday with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us. It is a Generic Live Show for a Thursday. Apologies for no show last night. I had a work commitment come up relatively late, so I had to reschedule it for tonight. But thank you for your patience, and it's good to be here on a Thursday, right before the long weekend, too. So hopefully you are going to be enjoying your long weekend. Hopefully you make it a safe long weekend. Here at HQ, a story that we have been following since it broke Tuesday? I think it broke on Tuesday? That sounds about right in my head. Or did it break Wednesday? I'm not too sure on the date. What was I going to say? So the attacks in Belgium, Brussels, this terrorist attack is just, it's just devastating for everyone involved. Yet another terrorist attack has taken place on Earth. Want to bring you all of the latest information, of course, and we want to break down the timeline for you. According to thetelegraph.co.uk, there are two attacks that took place. One at the international airport, reportedly near the American Airways departure lounge, and an underground metro subway station, where, according to thetelegraph.co.uk, they're reporting 31 people died, injuring 270. Now, I've seen that, I say reportedly, because I've seen that number go as high as 34. So I'm just not trying to give away false information, but I'm just folding on what I've been being given here. The third suicide bomber was a fugitive Paris bomb maker. Turkish president says that one suspect was deported from Turkey to the EU. This, of course, is the information, the latest information that telegraph.co.uk is providing for us. A Paris terror cell survivor travelled to Birmingham before the attacks last year. Belgium rebuckled for chaotic passport control 3 weeks ago. Airport bomber's suicide message to his mother, which we'll be getting to that in just a moment. Bushel's air attack suspects unmask at the El Bakri brothers. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that incorrectly. First death confirms as others' families wait on to hear from others reporting either injured or missing. Breton feared dead and he says he is safe before going on the metro. And police are now hunting down a fourth subject. Before we get to this message here on a Thursday. Who are the suspects? Here are the suspects in question. They are the Baroki brothers. One of them detonated the suicide bomb at the metro, killing 20 people. He is suspected to have rented a house with a false name in the forest suburb of Bushels, which was raided by police in connection to the Paris attacks. He and his brother, who was also involved with the picture, were well known to police and sentenced to 5 years in probation in February 2011, for carjackings. His brother died in the attack at the airport, which killed 11 people. In October of 2010, the other brother was sentenced to 9 years in prison opening fire on police during an armed robbery on a stockbroker. Excuse me, I'm trying to get as much information out here as possible. Like I mentioned before, a third suspect. Police are hunting down a man captured on airport CCTV footage walking alongside the two suspected suicide bombers. He is wearing a hat and a white jacket. Some media outlets have identified him as the mastermind who made the bombs in the Paris attacks, but nothing has been confirmed. Now, Aram El Baroki has had a message to his mother, which we're trying to track down here, impromptu-ly, like. Want to say, is this a message from people in my ear? Is this a message from his suicide note to his mother? Where is that located? Excuse me. Okay. All right. So, but this article does break down a good timeline. While we're looking for that, so at 8 o'clock, this is all local Belgian time on the 22nd of March. So yes, on Tuesday, local time, at 8 a.m., airport explosions. We're 8:40, all flights out of Brussels Airport, all flights were suspended. An hour later, at 9 o'clock, the metro went up. Threat level escalated from a 3 to a maximum 4 at 9:15 a.m. At 9:30 a.m., the metro station was closed. 10 a.m. local Belgian time on the 22nd, all public transport had shut down, including trains, trams, buses, everything shut down. Residents were told at 10:30 a.m. To stay where they are. Students were to stay indoors. Security were tightened at nuclear plants. Later on that day at 4:20 p.m., ISIL took responsibility for this. At 4 p.m. local time, 3 days of mourning were declared. That means 3 business days were to be taken out for mourning the losses of people who died in this. So that's kind of a breakdown of the events that occurred. The note which was to the mother stated, I'm always on the move. I don't know what to do. I'm being hunted everywhere and I'm no longer safe. If I go on like this, I will end up in a prison cell next to him. So that is the note that was found by the mother of one of the brothers. I want to continue to break down this timeline here. It has been reported, security officials say that ISIL has trained at least 400 fighters to target Europe in deadly waves of attacks. Michael Fallon, the defense secretary, says it's way too early to criticize the Belgian intelligence agencies over the alleged failings of run of the attacks. He told the BBC that I saw that report, but I honestly think it's far too early to start criticizing the Belgian authorities until the investigation is complete. He goes on to say, after promising in the wake of the November Paris attacks that 10,000 military personnel, he is questioned by that by BBC reporter. Doesn't say the name of the reporter, it just says he was on Newsnight. He says, yes, that is still being implemented. We have troops standing by now, backed up by armed police. The armed police are the first response, and they are being increased. So they are now armed police at more are visible at railway stations and airports. So that's what he said as well. At 2 o'clock. Now I'm wondering what day this is. If this is today, it looks like it is. It looks like these are updates from today, March 24th. Yes, they are. Okay, being confirmed. They are. These are the following. The updates are from today. There's a tribute that happened to St. Louis University in Brussels, pay tribute to one of the students that died on the attack, Leopold Hecht, studied law at the University of Belgium's capital, and there's a tribute that went out to him as well. Of course, people are paying tribute. The attack has left behind two cases of explosions. Suicide bombers at the airport. It could have been much worse, as they left two suitcases of explosions at home, as it's being reported as well. Malcolm Turnbull, the Prime Minister of Australia, of course, weighed in on this, as most of the world leaders did. And the Belgian ambassador to Australia says it is dangerous for the Prime Minister to link European refugee crisis to the deadly attacks in Brussels. In a speech to the Lowy Institute on Tuesday night, Mr. Turnbull said ISIL is using the refugee crisis to terrorists into Europe. But the Belgian ambassador to Australia, Jean-Luc Botton, was cautioned against linking the issue with the deadly attacks in his homeland this week by stating, he told ABC News, quote, "It's dangerous because it is precisely what ISIL wants, that we could make confusion between terrorism and migrants, and between terrorism and ISIL. My view being the ambassador's view is that the terrorists who committed to the latest attacks in Paris and in Belgium are European raised and born. Maybe from foreign origins, but they're still European. So there's nothing with the refugee crisis that is the main danger to assimilate that." The coverage goes on like that. It's happening way too often, and you know it's sad to see that this sort of stuff is happening more frequently. I did see there is a cartoon going around at the moment though of an online cartoon which. I sit on both sides of the argument there when it comes to this, that it does it has three kind of characters on it. It has Paris, Belgium, and Turkey. Of course, it originally had Belgium and kind of Paris comforting Belgium after the attacks, and of course Turkey's in there now. Two, they have had, I think, four minor terrorist attacks since both the Paris and the most recent Belgium one, of course. And someone's cashing in on that. And I sit there and think, why do you have to do this? You're part of the problem. You're bringing negativity to this as much as everyone else is. So, you know, people online are stupid. That's about that's as far as I'm going to go with that. But the Courier Mail has an opinion piece though, the article's written by Andrew Bolt. Now I'm not sure who's in the 1:34 bit of audio that we have here though. So here's this piece. I'll just play it and I'll lay out what What Mr. Bolt says in the article. We'll lay this out, to bear and see if we agree with it or not. Here's the piece.
Leaders in Asia, including Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, have condemned Tuesday's deadly attacks in Brussels that killed at least 30 people.
I'm honestly in shock and very angry to hear of the multiple blasts in Brussels, Belgium, that have claimed so many victims. Whatever reasons they may have, terrorism can in no way be forgiven.
Tokyo says two Japanese were among the 200 people injured in the suspected suicide bombings at Brussels Airport and a metro station. Islamic State has claimed responsibility. Chinese Premier Li Keqiang, speaking at a regional meeting in Hainan, also expressed sympathy to the victims' families. In Sydney, Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says countries need to have stronger border protection.
But I can assure Australians that our security systems, our border protection, our domestic security arrangements are much stronger than they are in Europe, where regrettably they allowed things to slip, allowed security to slip, and that weakness in European security is not unrelated to the problems they've been having in recent times.
The attacks have sent authorities around the world racing to review security at airports as well as train and bus stations.
So let's break down, and let's not play an ad. Thank you. I get to play the ads here. So let's break down this. So the big question that gets posed in this and the article here is what Australia can learn from Brussels. Now, basically, it poses a bunch of questions, which I do plan to answer momentarily here before we have to take our break here. But, and you know what, I will answer them one by one. Why have Muslim terrorists in Brussels this week slaughtered 34 civilians in the city's airport and underground? Well, in terms of ISIS, they do go for soft targets. They're not going to blow up. Post 9/11, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but post 9/11, they're not going to go for hard targets anymore because that's just too hard. But they are going to go for soft targets, like we have been seeing with the San Bernardino, Paris, this attack, Sydney siege. If we want to go back to there, we have seen soft targets being the more targetable. Then this article questions why Muslim terrorists from Brussels earlier joined ISIS to attack at Paris that killed 130 people. Well, do I really have to answer that question? Well, it's a tough question to answer because I don't want to say luck of the draw, but I mean, it just, once a bomb goes off, that's about it. So I don't know what the point of that question is, but anyway, we'll move on. Why did a Muslim terrorist in Brussels kill four people at the city's Jerusalem Museum? Well, that's not for me to answer, because, you know, I don't know the answer to that question. I shouldn't say fun fact, but there are 450 Belgian Muslims, most of them from Brussels, have served with ISIS. There are now 300,000 Muslims in Brussels. Brussels is the Europe's highest Muslim city, home to a colony large enough to sustain its own culture. An entire network of terrorists, from the police. Now, I can try and pick through the editorialized here. The author of this article, more power to them, because they kind of compare Brussels to Japan. Now, Japan has 127 million people. That's 80 times the population of Brussels and six times the amount of Australians. But only 100,000 of them are Muslims. That's a third of the Brussels one and a fifth more than Australia. So, Japan are stricter on immigration, unlike us and Europe. Way much easier than Europe. So, there you go. That's a fun fact. We'll continue our coverage, of course, of this story that we have been following all week since we were meant to do the show yesterday. We've been following this story. Well, of course, we've got more from this story to come next hour. Thanks so much for joining us here on Generic Live Show, here on a Thursday night, right before the Easter long weekend. So, with all this in mind, making a safe long weekend. As we continue, we had local elections, and we'll break down the results as we continue. Let's just say, oh, here's a good tease for you. Independents won, and they kind of won big in kind of a interesting way. We'll break it down as we continue. Here on the Generic League, we're getting super... We're actually talking about my town right next. So it's going to get super local super quickly as we continue. Here on the Generic Live Show, it's 10:21. The Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us here on a Thursday. Finally, a Thursday. Well, it feels like Friday. Actually, Friday, it's Thursday, right before a long weekend. I hope you've got lots in mind for your long weekend. Hopefully it's a safe one for you and your family. It's certainly going to be a good one here. We had a whole bunch of elections last week, and thank you everyone who actually joined us on public radio networks around here and around the place, who actually tuned into the election special that I did here on election day. Hopefully you listen to that. If not, well, that's not my loss. I shouldn't say that. I'm saying really, really mean things today. I really should not do that. I blame the adult beverage. It's 10 o'clock at night. It's a long weekend. I'm the only one here in HQ at the moment, so I there's no one else here to tell me what to do. But we have a couple of headlines from the local elections, and we won't drone on about this for too long, but we have got some more... Excuse me as I bend down on the microphone. We have some more election news coming up right after our next break, because, yay! But anyway, so there's a couple of headlines from the local Cairns Council elections. Bob Manning, of course... he was the incumbent mayor. He wins a second term as Cairns mayor. As while the ballots are being counted, what is that noise? That noise can stop. Thank you. I don't know what that was, but anyway. So Manning wins.
One of Tony Abbott's criticisms of
shush. I haven't gotten to you yet. Manning wins as Jim Brooks conceded while the ballots were being counted. We're going to break down all nine divisions. Now, independents won big. We'll count them as we go on here. Now, so Manning win big. And most of the booths are in. And, of course, it's mostly decided. So, for division one... Muller Brett got in. He is the member for Cairns Unity Group. with 44%. 43% was Sandra Carlton, independent. She came next, so quite a go there. The division that I thought was going to do better, John Schilling, Cairns Unity Group, won with 60.5%, while 39.5% went to Jesse Martin. For Division 3, Kathy Zanger, won, independent, won. She won with 67%, with the Cairns, Connect Cairns candidate getting 21% there. So, an independent for Division 3. Division 4, Cairns Unity candidate Terry James won with 63%. Very distinctive results. Number 5, the Cairns Unity team, Richie Bates won with 57%. Division 6, which is my local one, independent Linda Cooper got in with 86% of the vote. Division 7, Max O'Halloran won with 49% of the vote. Almost getting majority there. Division 8, you've got Jesse Richardson in one of the closer races, 52-47. That was one of the closer ones. And for Division 9, independent, Brett Old got in with 36, with the divide, with it being close, with 31 going to the Cairns Unity boot. So more independents won this time around than what they did in the last election, which is good to see. I like independent candidates. Independent candidates, when it comes to politics, independent candidates are good to have. They are deciding votes, so this will be good. It's healthy. I'm going to geek out here for 30 seconds before we have to take a half-hour break here. So independent candidates are good. I like independent candidates. They are swing candidates, which is what we want to see more swing candidates when it comes to our politics, because, you know, yes, they can change on issues in less time, they get to decide a lot more of the nitty-gritty of what actually gets done, and they're actually focused on a towing a party line. So I actually like independent candidates and swing candidates that, you know, tow the moderate line. They actually are the nitty-gritty, and they are important when it comes to small town politics like Connect Cairns. Not Connect Cairns. When it comes to Cairns, Freudian slip. When it comes to just town politics. Now, when it comes to town politics, you actually have these political action groups running rather than parties themselves, which I want to ponder one day, but I won't get to that. I won't get to that today, but I will get to that topic one day. Note that down. I will talk about political action groups running rather than just political parties, because it is interesting to see that they are one side or the other. So I don't know what euphemisms they're trying to throw around here. But anyway, as we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Thursday, right before the long weekend, Australia, look out. Look out. Look behind you. It could be a lot. It could be the race for a new Prime Minister. Look out. Scary. Ah! Sorry to scare you this soon and this late at night. Holy cow. As we continue, it's 10:32.
Finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
for joining us here on a Thursday evening. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. Whether you're listening to us live or on your hard drive, we do appreciate you joining us. I want to give the podcast a bit of a pimp out at the moment. The podcast, we do podcast the best bits of the Generic Live Show. We are on the Geeko and the Chef Wonder podcast networks, geek-io.net/GLS. ChefWonderMedia.net/GLS. You can find us on iTunes. Just search GLS and you'll find us there as well. We are on the Geeko master feed as well if you do subscribe through us that way. We do appreciate you joining us. We clip out the best bits of every hour, both hours of the show. We put them up as a separate podcast and we clip out funny moments from the show and put them up on the site as well, so you can check out the podcast there. We normally do record the show on a Wednesday. It normally gets up by Friday, so typically that's how the schedule works. It's just, and I do apologize for the no show yesterday. I had a work commitment that kind of kept the show from being to light. We're doing the show now instead, ahead of a long weekend ahead of you. I want to make sure it is a safe weekend for you and yours. Now, this last week, and it's kind of old news now, but I want to break this down because it's interesting. And we've got two opinion polls that reflect this announcement now. So, want to break this down for you. This is a big question mark around when Australia is going to hold their election. Now, we know the US election is going to be in November. We've got a lot of politics on this episode. I do apologize for that. We've still got more to come, unfortunately, for those of you who don't like politics. But it's you know, 2016, it's a season for it. It's a cyclical news item. Want to break this down for you. We won't play all of everything that everyone has said, but want to break down. And, of course, the chief political correspondent for Fairfax Media, we'll get him to speak in just a moment. Now, what actually happened? Now, there's a lot of confusion of what actually happened when the Prime Minister gave his press conference, which we will play. The Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, the Prime Minister of Australia, noticed that the Senate was filibustering a bill that they were blocking constantly. The Governor General accepted the government's advice, Peter Casgrove, and recalled the Parliament for 3 weeks' time, resuming April 18th. This is all over a building watchdog legislation bill that I know absolutely nothing about, full disclaimer. So, you know, if anything else on this show, I am down to earth and honest. If this building watchdog legislation does not get passed, Malcolm Turnbull will call a double dissolution election for July 2nd. Now, he didn't make the announcement official this week. He announced that if it doesn't pass within a certain time frame, July 2nd will be that. Many members of the Senate just sees it as an empty threat. I'm just reading notes. The budget, though, will be moved forward a week to May 3rd. The opposition says that it is ready to have the election. Here is a chief political correspondent for Fairfax Media breaking it down even further.
Malcolm Turnbull was that he was allergic to decisions. Well, not anymore in the face of this very decisive move by Malcolm Turnbull to declare that we will be going to a double dissolution election on July 2nd of this year unless the Senate passes important industrial legislation. That the Parliament will come back, the budget will be held earlier than was originally set down for May 10. It will be now on May 3. and that unless the parliament passes legislation critical to the government, then there will be a double dissolution election held on July 2 of this year. He's saying to the Senate, you either pass this legislation or we're having an election, and we're having an election that's going to be strongly fought on this very subject. Malcolm Turnbull's been criticised for not having enough decisions, not doing enough in his first 6 months, and for not having enough in play. Well, he's certainly got plenty in play at the moment. He's put it all on the table, and he's dared the Senate to block this legislation and see what happens. No one really saw this coming, this move of bringing in the Governor-General, to get the Governor-General to call the Parliament back for this special three-week sitting ahead of the early budget. And it has really changed the whole political equation. It means some pretty clear things for the crossbench, particularly many of whom are likely to be wiped out in a double dissolution election. So the stakes have suddenly been raised. Unless we see something highly unpredictable, like the Senate passing legislation that it has twice blocked already, or seeking to amend, and seeing whatever sort of imponderables come from that, then it looks certain that the nation is moving towards a double dissolution, the first one since 1987 and the first winter election since about that time as well.
So yeah, a couple more key facts in there as well. If it doesn't pass the bill by May 14th, that is the timeline that they are that is the timeline. Actually, hang on. Yeah, my microphone is unmuted. See, I'm doing all the production work myself. This something I don't normally have people telling me what to do. Now, that is that is another information to do as well. Now there are. That is something that is happening. There are two polls that have been released, opinion polls, that shows that the Liberal government is up 51 to the Labour 49 in a two-party preferred environment after the second round of preliminary votes have been cast. Now, the Morgan poll shows that Labour is up 50.5 to LNP's 49.5. Both polls say it's too close to call, because both of those results do fit in a 2.5% margin of error. I believe both polls are a 2.5% margin of error. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that is the case. But they do mention as well here on the Sydney Morning Herald article that the pundits. In terms of necessarily political pundits that make are living making political observation, as in people who place bets, they predicted that the LNP would win in a landslide. So the night before the election, saying that $1.01 to LNP ALP's $15 the night before the election. So there is that to consider as well. Let's hear both sides of the coin. Here is Malcolm Turnbull making that announcement last week. This was on Monday.
Today, I called upon His Excellency the Governor-General to advise him to recall both Houses of Parliament on April 18 to consider and pass the Australian Building and Construction Commission bills and the Registered Organisation Bill. And he has made a proclamation to that effect. I make no apology for interrupting Senators' seven-week break to bring them back to deal with this legislation. This is an opportunity for the Senate to do its job of legislating rather than filibustering. The go-slows and obstruction by Labor and the Greens on this key legislation must end. The Senate will have an additional three sitting weeks to deal with the ABCC and registered organisations legislation. Plenty of time to pass these important laws. If the Senate fails to pass these laws, I will advise the Governor-General to dissolve both Houses of Parliament and issue writs for an election. Because such a double dissolution must be done on or before the 11th of May, The government will be bringing the budget forward to Tuesday, the 3rd of May.
That was Malcolm Turnbull at a very, very brief press conference making his announcement. Here is Bill Shorten, the Leader of the Opposition, part of his speech. We won't play it all because we don't have time to play it all, but here is part of his speech that he's giving shortly after Malcolm Turnbull made his announcement.
To put his own future ahead of Australia's future. Today, Australians have seen a Prime Minister in full panic mode. There can be no better demonstration of the chaos at the heart of this dysfunctional and divided government than the fact that the Treasurer of Australia thought that the budget was going to be on a different day to his Prime Minister only an hour earlier than when the Prime Minister told Australia of the new date. Now, Mr. Turnbull promised new economic leadership, but he's failed to deliver. Mr. Turnbull promised fairness, and he's failed to deliver. And Mr. Turnbull promised unity, and he has monumentally failed to deliver. The only things that Mr. Turnbull is delivering are big tax cuts for large corporations and tax cuts for people already earning over $180,000, including himself. This is the Liberal Party looking after their own. But in the process, everyone else pays for it. Cuts to Medicare, cuts to the pension, cuts to education, cuts to family support. In today's speech, Mr. Turnbull outlined his priorities for the election. Not one mention of Medicare, not one mention of schools, not one mention of universities, not one mention of childcare, not one mention of TAFEs and apprenticeships.
That is Bill Shorten, the Leader of the Opposition, giving his response speech. It's getting interesting. Everyone's in full campaign mode. Now, leading up to this, to whether the Senate will pass this bill. Now, I'm not much of a Senate geek. I can't tell you if the Senate is going to pass this or not because I doubt it. They've blocked it twice. They're filibustering the bill, in fact. So I can't tell you. I can't say that they are. They're gonna go now. Sure, we're gonna pass your bill. It's magically gonna fly on through. Now, I can't imagine that. I hear there's bad stuff in the bill. I don't know the bill itself, by the way, as well. Now, it's interesting. I will say this because it's a chance to run a campaign, and I think it's an excuse to call an election date. This is what I envy. This is why I like the United States system, for one thing. Everything is set in stone. There is a procedure. There is everything set in stone. Everything is outlined. You have primary elections. I know it's a different, president rather than a prime minister, but the system's the same. Everything is structured. Everything's set sort of dates. And then you have a general election, and then you have a set campaign time. Now, I know it's a different setup, but we can learn one thing so from that as well. So it's, I don't know if we're going to be heading into the polls on July 2nd. If they pass it, what are they going to do? What on earth is Malcolm Turnbull going to go, whoa, you passed my bill? What? We're still having the July 2nd election anyway. So there is that. Winter is coming, kids. Winter is coming. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell, thanks so much for joining us. The numbers are in. The music industry has some surprising results. We'll give you more details as we continue. It's 10:50.
find us on Google Plus. Just search The Generic Live Show and react. This is The Generic Live Show with Dale Kennedy.
Live show here on a Thursday. Thanks for joining us here on a Thursday. Normally a Wednesday, but it's Thursday, right before the long weekend. So hopefully you don't eat too much chocolate over the weekend. Be mindful of the chocolate you eat over the weekend, because we don't want anyone to get sick. Now, the long weekend means more time to relax. Now, we all know what relaxing means, right? No? Well, have a guess. Time's up. Much guessing time here on the Generic Live Show. You know, it's quick and the dead around here. You need to get in quick. It's a time for listening to music. Yay! Music's normally a thing that is consumed over long weekends while you're doing the final touches on, if you make your own hot cross buns, more power to you. But, you know, handy, have a chocolate, eating chocolate, you get the family around, you got to put on a little bit of music. Now, the music industry has the... Actually, who's reporting this? The Recording Industry Association of America released their results for the music industry for 2015, I believe. Yes, on Tuesday. They announced their results, and the industry grew in 2015 for the first time since 2011. Music streaming is the largest piece of the pie for the music industry, generating $2.4 billion in US music sales last year, surpassing digital downloads as the recording industry's single biggest source of revenue and propelling the business for first-year growth since 2011. The listening format contributed 34.3% of sales, edging past digital downloads, which contributed to 34%, according to a report by the RIAA released Tuesday. Overall sales climbed 0.9% to 7%. Such growth, however slight, will fuel the music industry's claim. Industries claim that streaming services like Spotify and Apple Music will reverse decades of contraction and overtake digital stores like Apple's iTunes. There's a period there. Revenue from digital downloads declined 5.2% in 2015, while sales of singles declined 12.8%. Paid streaming services accounted for half of overall streaming sales, as the number of paid music subscriptions grew to 13 million by the end of December, the RIAA said. Usage of ad-supported streaming services is growing faster than sales of those services, the RIAA said, repeating the record label's push for Spotify and YouTube to convert more free users into paid users. Spotify, of course, takes the biggest slice of the streaming services pie. Quote, we and so many of our music community brethren, weird word choice there, feel that some technology giants have been enriching themselves at the expense of people who actually create the music, Carrie Sherman, chairman and chief executive officer of the IRAAA. AAAA wrote in a blog post, quote, we call this the value grab because some companies take advantage of the outdated marketing disordered in government rules and regulations to either pay below fair market rates to avoid paying for the music altogether. Spotify must now negotiate long-term deals with all three major record labels. The company has agreed with two of them. Vindy's SA Universal Music Group and Access Industries Holding LLC Warner Music Group, the two most biggest companies lengthwise in terms of words, have expired. Labels artists have asked Spotify to give artists more control over whether their music is available for free. Taylor Swift started the movement against Spotify, while Adele declined to have her most recent album available for on-demand listening by any music streaming services. Adele's 25, her most recent album, was best-selling album of 2015. Well, you know. Oh, and by the way, breaking news, licensing holds 2.9% of revenue. So less than 3% of sales held by, you know, held by licensing.
Sorry.
So, this is, yeah, you know, it's kind of like, well, oh, whoa. What's going on, huh?
Hello.
Who is this?
It's me.
You know, if I was actually a producer, I would have timed that up more perfectly. But I think there's some comedy there, you know. We can look at this. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, thanks for joining us here on GLS. More analysis on the story of the week. Of course, these attacks in Belgium. And we'll tell you, we have a heartfelt story that you can't refuse. Ever wanted to run a marathon? Well, we have a story of an Australian who's finished 40 of them? Interesting stuff. As we continue, it's 11 o'clock.